Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoints.
Day
ongoing,
something.
Day something. Holiday spectacular. I'm also Walker, joined in the studio by Rob Zachney.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Patrick Klepek.
Happy holidays.
And
I froze.
You'll shoot your eye out.
got the hole. That's it. That's how it finishes.
This is the Dark Souls one. I was like, am I on this? I'll be here.
I am
smiling beatifically upon this discussion.
Yeah. So, wow, you're in the pose. Posing like Jesus. The Jesus of Dark Souls, Rob Zachney. we are...
Does that mean he died?
Not the Dark Souls of Jesus. That's
you
different.
You use Son of Man's kiss to kill
yeah.
the...
The rules as I understand them.
Yeah.
Patrick, I learned this after the fact.
Sure.
I learned this after it was decided.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I know we're a five-star runtime podcast, as we know. But Patrick, you have decided.
This is a website that the reason we did Monday and Friday podcasts was so that we could do shorter podcasts. Instead, you took my idea and then just did two really long podcasts.
Yeah.
God.
That's right. That's true. Oh, it took time.
It did.
Like
did.
A little baby.
When it was just you and I, those were like hour pods.
A little baby. And now...
It's like, you know, so like when the chest burster like launches out of the chest, it's tiny.
It's tiny.
And you're like, this seems like could be a problem, but probably manageable.
I bet that cat can
And then
that
our podcast molted.
No. Yes, now we are it is a fully fledged xenomorph crawling on the ceilings, acid blood dripping down.
And so the idea came up with mostly because I think it'd be a fun gimmick because these podcasts have gotten so out of control. And also because we have a limited window and we're trying to get stuff done so people can have, you know, breaks over the holidays, is that we're limiting ourselves to a 30-minute discussion over a course of a number of topics. That doesn't include right now.
Yeah.
There is a moment where 30 minutes starts.
Yes.
And then Kato
is going
to... It
also doesn't include the Death Stranding spoiler cast, the Fire Emblem spoiler cast.
Correct.
Or the Game of the Year discussions, which took 2 days. Which took us 8 hours to record.
Yeah, that would be unfair restrictions. But something like Dark Souls and some of the other ones we're doing.
Can I shout a game out that we missed yesterday, even though they might not hear that one until tomorrow?
Sure, yeah.
Devotion came out this year.
Okay.
The horror game.
Oh, yeah.
I never played that.
Not many people got a chance.
There are means. And I'm going to say you should take the means.
Yes. I don't think that game is going to get released again.
That game, you should go support the developer by picking up their other game. Detention, yes.
Which I've also heard is fantastic.
I watched a couple of friends play through Devotion for Halloween around that time. I guess it was actually a little bit before that. But that game is fantastic. It is very sad. It is a horror game that has some really difficult, you know.
Which is the best
themes.
Horror that actually uses the horror of humanity to.
And a really surprising ending is what I want to say. Hmm. So, and not just surprising, like shock, jump scare. But anyway, that's it.
Okay,
last
this
shout
is a,
out.
Kato, this is officially the first podcast because we have now laid out the rules in this podcast.
Shit. Okay.
So this has to be first.
Fine.
Which makes it.
Because we can't do that in
also
all the other.
Also, we did the holiday greeting up top.
I think we could. We probably should.
We can, but I mean, the way
like,
we talked it through.
I have now set it up.
Yes, we've.
I would never in the third podcast be like, well, the way I learned about it is.
Yeah, so, we'll set up the rules each time.
Yeah.
But this is now officially the first one.
Okay, so, Dark Souls.
Dark Souls.
One of the ideas y'all had, I guess probably you, Patrick.
Is this starting it?
No, we're not hitting the button yet.
Okay,
right? Maybe we are.
I think we are. Can you pull up 30 minutes?
All right.
Starting.
30 minutes
30
on the
minutes.
Clock. Can we get a funny alarm sound?
Sure.
We also
what about like the you died sound? Like,
Yeah, that'd be, yeah. Uh-huh.
This is not funny.
Or can you pull up a Dark Souls laugh?
You should just have one ready to go. Yep.
Yeah, can we just pull up a Dark Souls laugh, please?
Yeah, and it'll just play on...
No, we need that to start.
Oh, you're saying, yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn, live production.
Did you find the Dark Souls laugh in Jedi Order?
Yes.
It's great.
It's good. I'm glad that it's there.
I was glad there was at least one of those in the game. Which is, and I think they specifically even typed it out in the subtitles where it's like a K, I forget what it is, but I think it was even written
in a way that was supposed to like signal this.
Exactly.
Nothing matter, I tell you.
That one. Or this.
Wait, this is just a compilation.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
This is great.
How long is the compilation?
It's a minute and 30 seconds.
Great.
We're listening to it. We don't have to listen to it all the way through the second time, but I want to hear them all right now.
Yeah. Dark Souls laugh of the decade.
That would have been, yeah.
Oh, ho.
What's that guy's name? Was it a big.
Sigmund? Siegfried?
Siegfried.
There's a couple of different ones.
That's one of my favorites because it's in the helmet.
I think this is showing there's a breadth here that
Absolutely.
People.
Oh yeah,
but there's a through line.
Mm-hmm. There's a story to be told about this that is untold.
Yeah, you're right.
I need to ask Miyazaki next
time. Yeah.
End of story. You bloody fool.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. Do you want to hit the timer?
Timer. Go.
Souls. Yep. One of the ideas you had was Dark Souls of the Decade. Conversation about Dark Souls. Also, you're going to make me talk
back,
about Dark Souls.
Yeah, we've hinted at this in the past of we diverge on Dark Souls 2 pretty sharply.
Yeah.
Which I will posit a lot of that probably you've talked about some mechanical or layout things you like about Dark Souls 2, but I think we often come at this series from different angles in which, like, I don't care that much about the lore or the storytelling.
Right.
Like, I'll watch a video and appreciate it, but during the act of playing the game, I'm doing almost zero engagement with that. Bloodborne was the rare exception.
Yeah.
Because the setting really called to me. And so Dark Souls 2 I found to be the least interesting to play, and I still mostly think that's true. But I know that you also think that the story of Dark Souls 2
I
is fantastic.
Do. Well, I think that, like, that is a huge part of it. I think... It's so many different ways I can talk about this, because I can talk about this in a positive sense, which is to say a way in which I'm just talking about what I like about it. There's also a version of this conversation where I get very defensive or very like responsive, which is like I know why people don't like Dark Souls 2, and those reasons don't bug me, right?
Right.
But let's start with stuff I like a lot, and I think the story stuff is a huge part of it. Dark Souls is a series, is a game about cycles. Dark Souls 1 sets up that there has been one big cycle from the time of the ancient dragons and blah blah blah, and then Gwyn, and then like okay. Are you going to continue the cycle, right? Dark Souls 3 is the whole premise is like, can we end the cycle?
Yeah.
The thing I love about Dark Souls 2 is in terms of narrative is like, that is a game in which you see the cycles, right? Like there are, just like in Dark Souls 1, there are four major bosses that you have to go do to advance the plot at a certain point. And each one of them is very clearly a reinterpretation or an echo of a major NPC from the past, from Dark Souls. And I like that stuff already. The stuff that I end up loving about the story of Dark Souls, there's kind of two things. One is not even story so much as atmosphere and tone. There is something about places like Majula.
So I will say, I think,
Majula is all-time good.
The all-time like spot to hang out in. Like the music is incredible.
Yeah.
Like it's a beautiful little area looking over the water.
Totally.
Like in a serious world of ugliness, it is like one of the rare times when it's just profoundly beautiful.
Right. Well, and then the other half of it is, it's funny that you don't care about, I don't think Dark Souls 2 cares as much about lore as it does about story. Dark Souls 1 is all about lore, and it's all about your character figuring out what happened in the past and then making this one big decision. Dark Souls 2 is kind of specifically about the kind of rise and fall of King Vendrick, who is the king of this land, who you read about in the histories. You learn about an ancient war he had with the giants. You go to the ancient war of the giants at a certain point, which is cool. And you find Vendrick. And that moment is like all-time moment of the decade contender for me. Do you remember finding Vendrick in that game?
He's like, you find him just like in a basement. He's really tall, and he's
completely degenerated. He's completely walking around in circles.
He's an optional boss,
but he's an easy boss.
His foot just tries to stomp you. Yeah, like, that's it.
He's lost
but it's sad.
His faculties. It's deeply sad. And he's a vision of you. He's like the vision of if like Dark Souls 1's vision of like a cycle of ruin and violence is very mythic. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yes, the ember is fading, and should we extend it and extend the age of man, or
right.
should we enter an age of dark? Sorry, the age of dark would be the age of man. Should we extend it and continue in this age of gods and myths, or should we let it fall and enter the age of man, the age of shadow? And this is like, no, the way that ruin works on bodies is you lose track of who you are, you lose track of yourself in time and space. This ancient war and the kind of decrepit kingdom that you're in have kind of unsituated people from themselves. And if you continue, you're going to become king of this world, and eventually you're just going to be King Vendrick again.
Right.
That is like literally the cycle that is put in front of you. And that is a story that's set up by like at the very beginning, told to you as a character from this like cool fate winding witch woman. And like there's a story in that way. And so I think one, I just felt really connected to what the stakes of that game were in a way that was I like Dark Souls 1 a lot. Sure. That's the other thing. 100%. I like Dark Souls 1 a lot. So that's a big part of it. It's like I love all of these little both the vignettes of the echoes of the past cycle stuff, the fact that like it kind of reduces down the mythic angle and kind of focuses on like here's a particular kingdom, here's what the effect of like
it doesn't feel like you're reading out a book of a thing that happened. You're
exactly.
getting to experience.
And you're also doing that a little bit, but going back and seeing that war is and like that war is in a place you've been to in the future. That stuff is sick.
I owe you when you. Experience that in the game, it was like, the game could, like, this series could be doing more things with its story that it often chooses not to.
Well, and then it's funny
but man, could be more interesting if they engaged with other ways
in
of storytelling.
In a future podcast this week, you'll hear me say that Sekiro is Dark Souls 2 too.
Sure.
Sekiro does this exact thing. Think about all the times in Sekiro, you go back in time to another place and relive out a war that happened in the lore.
Well, also, it's one in which it doesn't sacrifice the sort of mystical qualities of what Dark Souls does with the storytelling while also choosing to tell a very specific story. And I don't think lost that much in the process.
No.
Like, there's so
we
much about...
We were so worried about that with Sekiro, too.
Well, I think people don't know what it was going to... You know, how it was going to pan out. And as it turns out, like, there's... It kept the kind of secret world building where, like, do you want to engage with this? Do you not want to engage with this? But then brought along more people like me who's like, I don't want to sit and put together the item stuff.
Yeah.
Like, or it's more enjoyable to have that to be an addendum to the storytelling, as opposed to you're going to not really understand much of the through line unless, I mean, there is like an A to B to C, but it's not as, it doesn't have the same weight if you have to put it all together yourself. And I think Sekiro was like a really nice pairing of that storytelling style, which my guess is actually like closer to what they'll just keep doing
going forward. I think Elden Ring is probably going to be a similar situation.
I bet like it's a spectrum, but my guess is
I hope they bring character creation back for Elden Ring.
I think they've said as much. I think there's still a way to bring people along.
Definitely.
In that way.
So that is like the story stuff. I also do really love the gameplay.
I want a 15-minute warning, Kyle.
Yeah, please. Another thing in Sekiro. Sekiro is very good at one-on-one fights and fights against enemies who are similarly powerful as you. They are humans, right?
Which is a lot of Dark Souls 2.
Which is almost all of Dark Souls 2.
Yeah.
There are a handful of bosses that are like wild and do cool weird things and mythological, blah, blah, blah. But there's a ton of bosses in Dark Souls 2, and a lot of them are just people who fight in unique ways.
Or fight this bigger knight.
Bigger knight, or a knight that can, you know, that has an axe instead of just a sword, you know, whatever.
One boss that I played most of Scholar of the First Sin?
Scholar of the First Sin.
It's the optional boss. Fuck.
Which you shouldn't play, by the way.
I know. Yeah, well, you mentioned in a different podcast. We have to restate
really
it here.
Scholar of the First Sin is a re-release of that game with all the DLC, which is like nice that that's there. But they moved all the enemy placement around. They changed like
they fundamentally changed the game. It's a remix,
right? It's a remix, which is dope. I like that that exists. I never got around to playing Scholar of the First Sin, and I would like to, but I think I'd rather just replay Dark Souls 2 again first and get that experience because I loved the combat encounters in that game. Mm-hmm. That's a very, again, like Sekiro, a very open game.
The Rotten, one of the all-time good bosses.
Oh yeah, totally.
I'm trying to find the one that I couldn't beat.
There's a lot
Smelter Demon. Fuck you, Smelter Demon.
Smelter Demon. I'm going to look him up. There's a lot of open spaces in Dark Souls 2 where instead of just being like, you know, Dark Souls 1 has a lot of, and Demon Souls also, has a lot of like narrow hallways,
very funneled corridors. They're open spaces, but it's a rarity so that when you do encounter that, it's special. Like it's, the boss who's the big, thing that flies through the air. Like the moment you see an open space, it's an uh-oh. It's like,
yeah,
the
yes.
fuck?
Whereas here, there's a lot of open spaces, but there is a sort of soft pressure on the way you're supposed to move through them. You'll come to a big open area, and there will be a couple archers in the distance. There might be like a really tough knight in the middle who will activate if you get near him, and then like two or three other people who rush you or something like that, right? And it's like, okay, well, like how do you want to go about this? If you want to rush to those archers, you might activate the knight in the middle who will then be added to that big boss fight, into the big group fight.
Right.
There's a lot of group fights in Dark Souls 2. There's a lot of like you're overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. It is the game that taught me it was okay to unlock.
Yeah.
Through almost all of Demon Souls, except for a couple of bosses.
I mean, generally,
and for all of Dark Souls,
like you are almost always in a better position combat wise to not lock on. But spatially,
it's a comfort, but it's a safety blanket.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'm facing the right way, and I know that I'm not gonna like fall off the edge of the world.
Right. It makes it easier to roll and generally you are put at a combat disadvantage because you're going to get hit more often because you just are too laser focused.
Well, that is the other thing that happens with the enemies in Dark Souls 2 is they all demand something different from you. And I played a lot of Dark Souls 1 and a lot of Demon Souls the same way, which was shield up. And this is like the Bloodborne thing again, right? Shield up. You know, sword in my hand or axe in my hand.
You play a soldier.
A knight. I sidestep around you. I hit you in the back with a backstab. I roll.
You got to keep the medium roll so that you like can wear decent armor. Yeah,
exactly.
But
a lot of enemies in Dark Souls 2 are like, no, fuck you. You're going to backstep around me. You're going to sidestep around me. I'm going to literally fall. I'm a big turtle knight and I'm going to fall backwards on you. Or I have a secret weird like alcove in my back that opens up and fires a spider web out or whatever. You know what I mean? Like there's all sorts of counters to that. Those traditional play styles. And I just found myself when I played that game, that's the first game that I played through with dual-handed in that series. It's the first time that I felt like I had to learn how to parry. And it rewards parrying. It makes parrying very obvious. It makes in terms of when you've done it, whereas in Dark Souls 1, there's a lot of like, but it's too late. I can't step in and get the hit. I fucked up. And then it also just like, there's a degree to which it was the first time that the world felt. And so, okay, one of the big things people love about Dark Souls is the interconnectedness of Dark Souls.
I think that's overstated.
I know people love it, but I think
it's overstated.
I also think that
being, you know, when we did like old podcasts, like I think when we did What Is a Souls Like? Yeah. How do we define it as a genre? I think a lot of people would put that as a bullet point. I don't know that I would.
Me too.
I think that's more a thing they have done, but I don't know that it's intrinsic to what makes it special.
Right. It's special about Dark Souls.
Yes.
It also isn't that special to me because it falls apart at any prodding. Like, it's true that there is if you look at like the 3D map, it does all fit together. But like, the Undead Burg is not.
Geographically, it makes no sense.
It makes no sense. There's not a city.
They just stitch together levels.
Yeah, they stitch them together well. Nice work.
But then you get. You know, like a Fallen Order that I think like misunderstands like how it uses it.
Totally.
And then like, you know, it's not so much the Fallen Order does a goofy thing where it says like literally like unlock shortcut.
Yeah.
It's more that it misunderstands how the series has deployed shortcuts.
Right.
And then doesn't follow that through line or that design philosophy.
Dark Souls 2 like dismisses it entirely. If you look at a 3D map of Dark Souls 2, it like.
Well, it's a hub-and-spoke game.
But it also, like, if you tried to overlay all of the maps, they just don't work. The famous example is you go through whatever the poison windmill area is.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you climb the windmill.
What an ugly area to look at.
It's a hideous. That's, like, one of my least favorite areas in terms of visuals. It's
hideous.
Hideous, but not even Blighttown hideous. Like, it's not even trying to be the ugly place in that
game.
This game also
has, like, a fascinating production history, right?
Yes.
Like, I think part of what I like about Dark Souls 2 in, like, a broader sense is what it represents, which is like FromSoftware struggling to make a sequel to an unexpected. Dark Souls was a blockbuster hit relative to From Software terms.
Oh, absolutely.
It put them into a different stratosphere in terms of what was expected of them. You go read the history of this game. Like, mm-hmm. it was essentially like most of the game tossed out, redone halfway through. Miyazaki wasn't, it was handed off to people under him. This was meant to be like, hey, you guys do the sequel. Miyazaki is going to go off, and I guess he was doing Bloodborne at that point. It's a messy game, and I think the messiness is present in the game. In some ways, it's probably responsible for some of the things you like about it because 100%. It's messy.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I like messy things. I like ambitious things. And I like things that try to embrace messiness thematically along the way. And so the fact that
it's a confused sequel, and that's part of its charm.
But it's also a sequel about confusion.
Right.
It is explicitly a sequel about the ways in which you lose touch with yourself, the ways in which an empire loses touch with the people within it. It is not a mistake that you take the elevator at the top of the windmill, which one is already a goofy fucking thing, and then you go up and reveal yourself to be in a new lava world above the clouds that is not connected to the ground in any way. They didn't fuck up. That wasn't a cinema sin. You know what I mean? That was a decision about the surreality of imperial spaces, this kingdom that's fallen apart. I mean, that's always a big case I've always made with this privately to people, is that Dark Souls 1 is a game about time and space is situated and still. Okay, here is the world, and you kind of get a cross-cut of it through time in terms of seeing different eras of it because different places are in different degrees of disrepair. You see two different versions of Honor Londo. There is a sort of but the space is stable. Dark Souls gets timey-wimey, but it doesn't get spacey-wacey. Dark Souls 2, stealing terms from my good friends who do the Bonfire Side podcast. Dark Souls 2 gets fucking spacey-wacey.
Yeah.
Dark Souls 2 doesn't give a fuck. In fact, it does give a fuck about the ways in which spaces flow in and out of each other, but it gives a fuck about them in a way that it wants it to feel wrong. You want to slip into the well in Majula and end up this is a regular well. There's a well in Majula that is just a hole in the ground that goes forever until you're seeing ancient weird creatures. You see
you can climb back up through it though, right?
You can't get back up. You actually have to either teleport back up or get to the bottom.
You can go down, right? There are platforms.
That is where the Nido, the Gravelord Nido's echo, or not echo, whatever the Lord Soul is equivalent, is all the way at the bottom of that. Past, I want to say the Rotten. I forget the name of that. This is the thing.
Some of the rats in that opening Majula area, they're fucking hard.
They're hard to find. Yeah, they will fuck you up. There's that one down in that basement. Ugh,
maybe you know what? Maybe Fallen Order understood something about Dark Souls more than we gave it credit for. Because the fucking goats in that game will mess you up.
Those are
rams or whatever.
Those rams, with the horns. Those are the hardest enemy in Fallen Order by far.
No, Ungo Bungo or whatever the fuck that guy's name is.
We done?
That's 15 minutes.
Oh.
And we should take a break.
Really?
There's going to need to be
a break. There's going to be a break. Let's take a break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, we're back.
Oh, right, because we need ads.
We need ads.
That makes sense.
Ads.
Yeah, okay, we're figuring out as we go along.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Is there a reason you wanted a 15-minute break? You just want to know, generally. Okay,
yeah, I just wanted to get a sense. So I don't want to just talk about Dark Souls 2.
No, exactly.
I just wanted to
But those are the big. Yeah. That's the big reason I love Dark Souls 2.
Right.
I love the combat. The last thing I'll say about it is I think there's a real diversity of builds. I think that all of the different covenants you can enter are all really interesting, and it's where they started to really experiment with that stuff, which they would continue to do in all the rest of their games, or not Sekiro, but all the rest of the Souls and in Bloodborne. Yeah. And then the diversity of builds thing is . One of the reasons why Dark Souls 2 is a really popular game among PvP players is there's lots of ways to play Dark Souls 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's a
It's more balanced in that way, yes. Whereas like part of the charm of Demon Souls and Dark Souls is how much you can break them with like their different magic systems, Demon Souls especially. And I've long advocated if they're actually going to remake that game, keep that shit. Yeah. I don't actually know if I want them to balance that out, because I played Demon Souls and was a magic user for the first time because I was playing Demon Souls and I was like, I'm just going to do something different. And people were so mad when I streamed it because they're like, oh, you know, you broke the game. I was like, ah, fuck you. Like, I just want to see what it was like. And it was a fascinating way to play the game long range when it's just I don't engage with the game that
totally.
Way.
Totally. So it's like some of my favorite NPCs are in Dark Souls 2. There's like that cool scholar who's from a kingdom that no one even remembers the name of. He's like so far out of his place and time. There's the like masked kind of duelist who you meet a bunch of times. I love those characters a lot. There is a game about kind of spatial breadth instead of spatial continuity.
Three Sentinels. I'll say I
like Three Sentinels.
So
because a lot of people don't.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
You can cheese it. You can hide in a corner and just whack at their knees.
Yeah.
But that was an instance in which it went against my broader criticism of the overuse of dual enemies, where it seems to have become a trope, because by virtue of literally just doing one more, like, it changes the dynamic of those enemies, because they can jump.
Well, and so the thing
they can scale in that room in a way
that
it's not just like big two lumbering dudes coming
and
at
I
you.
Do think
or even O and S, right, is two fundamentally different enemies. That's part of what makes that being two so special, is that you have a big lumbering oaf and then this just super fast lightning spear that is just will fuck you up.
But the thing is, by including more multiple enemy fights, what Dark Souls 2 does is enable other builds and other strategies to be viable.
Sure, yeah.
To be preferable in those situations and make you mix it up. Like, so, again, there's the first time that I used I double-handed like a greatsword or whatever in those games almost all the way through once I understood my build, was I wanted that ability for those big overhand slashes, for those big wide slashes to hit multiple enemies at a time to fight bosses like the Congregation. And some of those things, the funny thing is, like, you end up looking at Dark Souls or especially Dark Souls 3. I was gonna say Bloodborne a little bit, but I have no idea what the development history was there. There was such an overlap. They released kind of only a year apart. Project Beast. That was like, who knows what they learned from one to the other.
Right.
But the thing I will say is, I think both Dark Souls 2 and Bloodborne are both trying to address the same basic issue, which is everyone plays Dark Souls the same way.
Yes.
And Dark Souls 2 does it by trying to open up inside of the same basic structure.
And without rejecting a certain place.
Right, without Bloodborne saying you can't do.
Bloodborne just
that is
says,
exactly it.
You can't do this.
Right, it makes gives, fun of you.
It gives you that crummy wooden shield, which is extremely
and
funny.
And there's like some line on the wooden shield that is like an insult,
it's basically
right?
like for cowards.
Yeah, basically.
And you can't use it. Like, I mean, anyone does anything in Dark Souls, but that's a roundabout way of like saying, like, actually, because like I played Dark Souls 2 same way that I played Dark Souls, because I could, and I don't play them multiple times. Had I done that, then maybe I'd something different, but that's what I liked. Maybe that's a huge part of my like attraction to Bloodborne, is because it said no. Like it said do something different, and specifically was addressing the way I played, which is how everyone played.
This is why I want everyone.
I didn't.
You didn't. What? You from the jump were not playing.
I picked up the Uchigatana in the first Dark Souls and never put it down. And
where
I
do
also
you, where
never.
Do you, where do you find that? Where is that in Dark Souls?
In the in Undead Burg, there's a merchant that if you kill, you pick it up early. Early.
Like, you just kill this merchant.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, I don't remember picking that up. But I was like, right. But you can get special items if you kill certain.
Absolutely.
Merchants.
And that I used that sword throughout, tried to upgrade it as much as I can, like, tried to keep. Hold on to it as much as I can because I love the move set, and it was light enough and dexterity based that I could have the fast roll if I built that way, is what I did. Which is what I fucking did. And
in Dark Souls 1, I think I used the hand axe for 3/4 of the game.
Would you?
What?
Yeah, because that's a popular build.
You can just. Like, it starts not particularly useful, but if you just dedicate the upgrades
to
it,
it turns. Right?
I was a pyromancer. I did pyromancy with the hand axe, and like eventually I gave it up for. Some big ass sword towards the end of the game, but like I had the hand axe for a long fucking time game.
I just used whatever katanas I could find because they were fast and had a slash and a thrust option.
Totally.
Sekiro is
no wonder.
My favorite fucking
no shit.
Because that's how wanted to play those games forever, and the whole. Posture system was just an added bonus of like being the kind of speed I wanted from that game always. Like I still enjoy Dark Souls. I never played 2. I only did 1 and 3.
Don't play 2.
I
everyone who liked Bloodborne or or after playing Bloodborne and Sekiro, I want people to go back and see how they feel about Dark Souls 2. They might still hate it. But the thing is, like, you may learn certain lessons of play that will change your experience of Dark Souls
2. Dark Souls 2, the criticism of it has softened so much over time because it was, I don't think people knew what they wanted from a sequel.
Yeah.
And then this game didn't surprise, like, it was just, it was a weird, it came at a weird time in a weird space for people at a weird spot for FromSoft. Now I think it's like genuinely like not beloved, it's liked. It's not seen as like.
It was also well reviewed at the time. Yeah, absolutely. It was one of those things where it was like, you know, NeoGAF.
Hey man,
and
they
Reddit
changed the lighting effects in that game. Remember that?
They did. I do remember that.
It did look. It did look better though.
It looked
the earlier
build. I would have loved that. I would have loved that. But of course it did. But like it turns out, developing games means learning. Sometimes you don't have the resources to pull something off,
right?
Because a console can't do it. Like
my guess is that was just a PC build thing.
Yeah, of course. And I wish it was in the PC build still. In fact, there was lots of stuff with torches in that game. And it's like this used to be a bigger, more important feature, didn't it?
I think that was part of the theory of like why it was like there was some torch tech.
Yeah. Totally. And it's fine for, you know, as always, like, I think people are allowed to have their taste.
Sure.
You know, but I know mine. But I think more interestingly in this conversation is like 10 years ago, Demon's Souls came out.
Is it really 10 years?
I think that's correct. I want to say it's 2009, February 2009. 10 years later, a Star Wars Demon's Souls game came out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Like, and obviously, there are important differences. We've talked about the differences.
But, I mean,
but in terms of the way Demon's Souls was received by the widest audience, that was like, this is a bad game. This is janky. This isn't responsive enough for me. This is too punishing.
It was legitimately controversial that GameSpot gave it its game of the year.
Yeah.
It was like, what?
Kevin Van Ord.
Kevin Ord.
Greg Kasavin was
a big advocate. But like that was like
shout out to that team.
I mean, it's hard to be like controversial with like your game of the year pick. But like that was like a big deal back then because that game didn't review well. Mm-hmm. People didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. It was an outlier, and it's hard to like outside of like you know, there's obviously Minecraft. Like,
yeah,
I think it's had like some of the most profound influence on
what. Wide kind of AAA, at least, but not even just AAA in terms of doing some of the groundwork coming up at the same time as the kind of roguelike boom, people learning different relationships with loss in games and like failure.
And also, this was an era when you had like folks like Cliff Bleszinski talking about Gears of War and saying, like, we always want you to see the stuff we built.
Yeah.
And like Souls, one of the things actually lost about what's actually I love about the series is that intrinsic to it's we're okay if you die, it's also like we're okay if you don't see shit.
Well, it's also
like you can miss whole area.
Yeah.
Like in Bloodborne, like Kanehurst Castle is
totally optional.
You just might not see it.
I
know people, especially when I reviewed the game, people were just like, the fuck you talking about? There's a castle. Like, yeah, you gotta get a ticket and you get on this thing and like
carriage,
And the whole series often has just completely missable or optional things. And like I consider that to be like sort of fun. Like it isn't necessarily.
No, you're
like,
totally right.
You won't see an area, but just like it's okay with you not seeing
absolutely. There are optional bosses. There are the quests, the way the quests are designed, that are like you need a wiki to follow some of these.
Yeah, some of that's. Some of that stuff I
totally
had an option to flip on.
but some of that stuff it emerges from that same ethos, right? Which is like this is we're putting together a world that is messy and that is like not. Like, it is wikiable, but, like, it is not necessarily...
You're meant to miss it.
Yeah. Like, that, again, thematically has been part of what these games are about, is about being overwhelmed in a world that is big and hostile and beyond the point of, like, not just, like, simple communication, but, like, all of the structures that would allow people to live in this world and have a convenient life are gone. They've been ruined. The roads are destroyed.
Bloodborne's the only one. Well, Bloodborne and Sekiro are both games in which you actually get glimpses of, like, civilization
and people living.
People live, which is part of what I like about both those games. Like, I like the apocalyptic nature of Souls, but it's also nice, even just for the grounding of the storytelling to, it's convenient to just have everyone gone, but it's nice to like have people or some
it
sense
totally
of civilization.
Like, I like, again, Majula feels like that.
Yeah, it feels like
one
a place.
Little shot of like, oh wow, cool. This is you know what?
People actually live here.
This is my hometown. You know what I mean? Yeah exactly. I can't forget this. What is your favorite Souls game? We only probably have a few minutes left.
What's the timer? 5 minutes? Right. Oh, we're good. It's Bloodborne. Far and away. Like, the aesthetic, the mechanics, the like just everything
did
about it.
Did you go back and do the DLC stuff?
Yeah. Oh, man. So I remember when I did the DLC, because I reviewed it for Kotaku, I reviewed Bloodborne, so I beat it, mm-hmm. got New Game Plus. The DLC came out like a year later or 9 months later, and you know, traditional Souls fashion, like the DLC picks up some ways through the game.
Right.
You don't just play a separate expansion. Yeah. So I had to play the old Hunters on New Game Plus, which means I had to like spend like a couple of hours just grinding to like just bring my base level. Yeah. Like, so it's why I don't. This why I had to summon for Orphan Kos, the final mm-hmm. boss in that, because I was just like, I was still underleveled. I was just frustrated, so I just summoned and beat the game. But yeah, I mean, the highs in Bloodborne, like, I will never forget getting kidnapped.
Right.
Like, getting hit by one of those masked motherfuckers, the bag, and then,
yeah.
and it's not, and it's, you think, oh, I'm dead. Like, I'll just, okay, I'll restart.
Where the fuck am I?
A cutscene, and now I'm in this weird, dark place with lamps everywhere. It's just such an, and especially when I was reviewing it, and I was just like, what the fuck? I don't even have anyone to ask. Right. Like, what is going on? That, when...
The amygdala pickup, the similar thing of, like, you're walking...
The hand pickup. And then...
Well, actually, it's not even a hand at first. Remember, at first, it's invisible.
Yes. And then later through the game, you get the ability to see what was around you the whole time. And you're like, oh, my God. There was a fucking Lovecraftian creature just...
Hanging out.
Look, the best Lovecraft game in 10 years was Bloodborne.
That's probably true. I'm not ready to say it. But it's probably true.
In a video game?
You know, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that... But my answer is probably in, like, in some indie space, but, like, not...
Sure,
nothing
yeah, sure.
But, like, you're saying compared to Sinking City,
yeah.
the Call of Cthulhu game from a few years
ago. And also, I mean, yeah. I haven't read too deeply on, like, the mythology, but, like, you know, I've seen, like, people like Dia talk about, like, how it engages with that in a way that is really interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I don't know. So you're Dark Souls 2. I'm Bloodborne.
Dark Souls 2.
What are you?
Sekiro.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I was pretty sure.
100%.
Is that...
Because I tried parrying in the Dark Souls games, and I could never get the hang of it, and it didn't feel...
Because every enemy is different, and it doesn't communicate in its visual language. Like, Sekiro makes that part of the design. It's like, we're going to communicate parry to you through attacks.
And not even just that, but, like, the posture system in general, the feeling that, like... What you're wearing down is their stamina bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it made the combat. You are reacting to the animation it feels more active than the reaction of like getting out of the way, because generally getting out of the way also means creating distance. But to play like a lot of those fights, backing off is the wrong call. Like you need to be in there and not necessarily attacking, but blocking, parrying, to
pressing.
Whittle.
You need
pressing.
To be pressing.
Yeah.
And partly that, and partly also the way that I feel like they... It felt to me like they were on a different... Like, they had upped their game in animations in a way. The way that the because they were all, like, kind of human, mostly human characters, the way that they reacted to different parries and different... The fucking... The attack, the follow-up attack that Seven Spears does after you Makiri counter him, it expresses such an anger at the fact that you fucking stepped on his spear. That, like, I was like, oh my, like, this is wild how much detail they've put into making these feel like, if you, like, took any clip of one of those fights where you're doing well, it looks like a fucking movie. Like,
yeah, that's, like, one of my favorite things there's that account on Twitter that just does the GIFs.
Ugh.
I can't remember the name of the person who runs it, but fantastic. Just, like, I love
starting
the game.
Yeah, that dude is starting to get invited out to...
Oh, yeah,
like,
I saw that. He did what
EA
Jedi
was
he
just
did.
Like, hey, come out and just record a bunch of Fallen Order footage.
Yeah, totally.
Which is
and
cool
make
as hell.
Fallen Order GIFs
the,
for us.
And the big thing, too, for me was, like, even when they went big on the enemies, you could still react the same way. Even if they added, they add certain things that are, like, well, if you're going to get hit by something this big, the parry is going to, like...
Yeah. Like
really
the great ape,
you
like you could still
you would
that shit.
Yeah, you would fucking stab your sword into the ground and use the friction of the ground to block it, but you still fucking block it and it still does a ton of posture damage. And it was so fucking cool to be able to stand up to those things that way, even though like if you fucked it up, you're out.
You're done.
Like you're done.
Makiri counter, I think. I just watched some in Makiri counter.
It's very good. It's the best counter in the game.
Counter of the decade. Parry of the decade. Makiri counter.
Especially because that specifically the way that they signal that with one symbol, but it could be What was it? Two or three different things? Two things.
Three.
Three?
Couldn't it?
What's the third? Grab was the third. Grab, I feel like, was the easiest to tell apart.
Yeah.
But, like...
Is it going to be a sweep?
Is it going to be a sweep or is it going to be a stab? And some of those were real close together, but, like, it always felt fucking amazing when you hit it.
That's a brilliant idea of, like, we're going to signal that something big is coming, but you still have to read body language to know what it is.
Yeah.
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 Where are we at on time? I'm guessing we're there. Yeah, okay. 30 minutes.
That was good.
All right. That is going to do it for us.
Just let it play over the outro.
Happy holidays, everybody. We will be back with some other big, interesting podcasts the rest of the week, including Game of the Year, including, again, a spoiler cast for both Death Stranding and for Fire Emblem, and some other really big, cool things. I don't want to give a schedule. We'll just have to be surprised. Open a gift every day.
Yay.
All right, we'll be back. Fuck capitalism. Go home.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What do you think an advent calendar would contain?
What do you mean? What?
An advent calendar.
What's an advent?
From
advent?
XCOM.
Oh, that advent.
Like just open. Like, what's your mutant of the day?
Mutant of the day.
Like,
yeah.
Like, what?
Or
you,
would it be? Would
what
it be
will you
like,
be turned into with the pods?
Or would it be like qualities? Like, of a good citizen.
Compliance.
Yeah, exactly.
Spend the day thinking about compliance. Have you complied?
No. Well, with the fact that you said no, there's a knock at your door instantly. And out the door, and I'm gone.
I heard you ran out of cheese.
Yeah, gotta go.
Pepperoni.
All right, what are we doing? What is this? You know what's sick about this? We don't have to clap.
Yeah, that is good.
I like to do it, though.
3, 2, 1.
Damn.
Patrick.
That was all right. Thank you. Congratulations, Patrick.